Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms.
It's April 11th, 2021, and welcome to episode 232 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz?
The RCR is a podcast about retro computer news, nostalgia, collecting, and who knows what. Who knows really what. I'm Paul Hagstrom in Boston, and I am joined today by two retro computing enthusiasts, Carrington Vanston in Toronto. How are you?
Excellent. I'm Carrington Vanston in more places than just Toronto. Whenever I travel, yes. I stay me.
Fantastic. And Jack Nutting in Stockholm. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing pretty well. I'm glad that I got off my couch to join this episode.
Excellent. As are we.
It was totally worth it.
It was totally worth it. Yeah. So
I can already say.
Yeah. So it's I'm not actually sure what I was kind of curious now what the anniversary is of the last episode that hit the feed, because it was a long time ago. Episode 228, January 3rd.
I was gonna say someone said the last episode that actually came on the feed was January 3rd. Now that's yeah. A full 3 months ago.
Well, we're living in the March that never ended, though. So
I think that's right. True. Yeah.
What is
that,
time?
That was March, 2020, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What year is this anyway?
So I will just reassure people, although, I mean, like the people who aren't watching this on YouTube are not being reassured as I say this, but it is not turning into a YouTube only podcast. It is still an audio podcast. And pretty soon, episode 229, 230, 231, 232. Which you are now listening to, will be on the feed. For those of us who are joining us on YouTube, all five of you, hello. I'll catch back up. I'm the one who does the editing, and I'm the one who got too busy to do it recently.
Plus, the only one who does any actual work, so nobody's complaining.
Yes.
But it's still kind of fun to record and talk, and we appreciate those who happen to be available on the the YouTube feed to tell us where we're wrong and that kind of thing.
And also when we just can't think of a thing, usually I can just look over at the chat and it's like, right, like Mastodon earlier. Well, that's right. That's what that was called.
Right. But anyway, so we will keep recording, and pretty soon the recordings will catch up to the now like we used to remember back in the olden days. And so anyway, but so the host's topic, we Carrington had a suggestion for a host's topic. Actually, you could even read it, you know.
I don't need to read it. I can just say it, baby. I want to know about your heresies. I, as listeners to the podcast probably know, recently picked up an iMac G4, which I love. And it's a computer that I never had at the time. So it's something that I have coveted, but I had no nostalgia for. But that said, a big part of vintage computers is the nostalgia. Like, I love remembering how I use them. I love also the vintage look of them. The aesthetics is sometimes a really big part of collecting and using vintage computers. So here I am playing games on this old iMac G4, and the mouse is a horror show of awfulness. It's not the Puck mouse, but it might as well be. So I was faced with this dilemma. Do I ruin the aesthetics of my beautiful, snow-white, gorgeous iMac G4 with an ugly black Logitech mouse that works great but looks terrible? Or do I stay with the beautiful aesthetics and just say, hey, I'm not really that good at games anyway. What does it matter what my score in Harry the Handsome Executive actually is? So end of the day, I decided to pick the ugly mouse. So beside me here on the desktop is a beautiful white iMac G4 with a spongy but usable keyboard, two lovely Perspec speakers, and a hideous black mouse. And I want to know, would you and have you made the same choice? In your collections, do you prefer to always stick with vintage peripherals? The keyboard it came with is the keyboard you have to use. Or do the supposed benefits of newer peripherals, mice, keyboards, monitors, whatever, outweigh the aesthetics or the joy of having a complete, you know, matching number collection? So that was my choice. I clearly have a price, and that price is gaming. So there you go. I want to know, you two, in your own experience, do you stick with vintage peripherals, or do you go with the new ones if you like them better?
Well, I'm always perfectly happy to mix and match to get whatever seems to be the best of many worlds. And that was true at the time also. And like, I think at the time that this iMac G4 was a current thing, I bet you that companies like Kensington and Targus and Belkin and whatever were selling mice that were pure white, that were designed to go along with the Macs of the day that you could buy. So it would thematically match your device at the time, but would have better buttons and a better scroll wheel and better everything.
And might even be period correct. Oh, that's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
Yep. Because I feel like there's always been...
I'm not the smartest man on the show.
...third-party market of companies that are trying to chase what Apple's doing in terms of style to try and match it. Try and provide peripherals and
yeah. I remember when everything was Bondi blue, like
yeah,
everything.
Right.
Yeah,
when the world turned translucent plastic.
Yep.
So you personally is that what you do, Jack? Like, is that what you've actually done? Gone and got vintage peripherals that match in, or are you just talking a big game? But in real life,
I have not
ugly logic.
Actually done that.
Okay,
I'm giving you an option.
I see. Do what Jack says. I would go with not what Jack does.
I would go with the ugly black mouse that you did. Like, you know, I have one of these, you know, weird gaming mice that I bought to just use for my normal, you know, desktop stuff, whether I'm gaming or not, just because it's a good mouse. It has, like, you know, good DPI and whatever. And yeah, it has funny lights because it's a gaming mouse, but like, it's a mouse and it's fine. Hmm. And I think that for me, it's always been, I've always preferred function over form in a way. So, like, you know, even back in the olden days, if you had an Atari and you had the, you know, the crappy square joystick, like, that came with it, like, that was functional, it worked, but there were so many better joysticks you could buy even at the time that made every experience so much better. And even today, I have some brand new controllers that I will use with a 40-year-old Atari system, just because for me as a child, those square joysticks, they weren't fun. They were like the worst thing about gaming on Atari things was like the default joysticks. They were just awful, nasty things. And so it's like, so you can buy things that don't match it in terms of how it looks, but work better with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the same token, I have no special love for CRTs. I know that some people do, and some people are really, like, they want to have the CRT that is from the era of the machine they're using. But I remember being like 12 or 13 years old and reading an article in Popular Science or something that said that one day we will have bright LCD screens, flat screens, instead of these things we're using. And I was like, that's amazing. Why can't I have that now? So I'm very, very happy to use a nice, modern, bright LCD screen or even better, 60-inch TV connected to my old video games or computers instead of suffering through a little 8-inch CRT of some kind or something. Like, to me, that was... I can appreciate the nostalgia factor of seeing that if someone has it, but for me personally, the tiny screens and the scan lines were always the thing that was just like, that was a necessary evil, but it wasn't like something that I particularly enjoyed. Like, oh, these scan lines are great. It was never a thing that I said in the 80s. I love all these horizontal lines that are always visible up and down the screen. It was not a thing that occurred to me.
Okay. What about you, Paul?
Yeah. I have, well, yeah.
Because you got everything.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking a little bit about the CRTs just now. I have a Color Classic that it's not quite working. I need to get a replacement battery and possibly clean off some capacitor gunk. But nevertheless, when I turn it on, I hear dung, like this little like the noise of the CRT turning
on. The CRT noise, yeah.
And I was just thinking, you know, that's something you're not going to get from the LCD. I wonder if I can record that.
True.
And then just make a little device that would make that noise and then turn on the LCD.
Yes.
But yeah, because that's how I sort of knew like something was going to happen, except then nothing happened. So I guess I didn't actually know that. I just thought it was going to.
Yeah, that's like actually that's my when I was a kid, we had a big color TV. It was like one of these big, you know, it's like a cabinet with a TV in it that my dad had built. It was a Heathkit thing that he had assembled. And that was the thing that when you turned it on, it made that big, a very big, deep resonant bung sound that also resonated through the whole metal, the whole wooden cabinet. So it was a big sort of boom. And then it took a solid 2-3 minutes to warm up before you saw or heard anything. So it was like that big sort of bung was like the intro to like, okay, now it's coming. Yeah. Now the TV is going to start to work.
Yeah, the excitement like, is
there's
building.
There's a nostalgia thing. Yeah, it's building up. It's actually happening now. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I can appreciate that too. But at the same time, if I just want to play a game or, you know, work on something, that's not the important thing to me. But yeah, when I do experience it, that is a joyful moment. Yeah. That's true. Those like the old noise of any of those things.
Yeah, kind of similar with the disk drives and things. Yeah, I was thinking. So Carrington, did you have a like a joystick for the color computer?
Yes, the world's worst joystick. I had the joystick. It was a Tandy joystick, little black box, and sticking up from it was a thin little silver, probably aluminum rod that would just fall over. Like it just flopped around, and there was no resistance. It really felt it came broken. Like you couldn't design something that felt more broken than this thing. Like it looks like it should be attached to something, and it just flopped around like the most disinterested joystick. It was like the Tandy ennui. It was just like, must we game? I cannot bother. It was terrible. So just like the worst ever. So yeah, I had that one. Yeah. Stuck with me, though. It's one of the joysticks I remember most of all the joysticks I've ever owned.
Because that's sort of exactly what I was thinking. Like, you know, and that if that was the thing that you were trying to recapture, like if you're trying to use a color computer and do gaming, I could really imagine completely giving up on the original experience.
But okay, so here's the thing, though. I have a question. I am kind of notorious on this. Well, I think I'm notorious because I think I'm kind of a big deal here in Canada. So on the show, I'm the non-collector. I'm in my room full of nothing but my one lonely couch, and it was a big deal for me, and it feels like an imposition on my life to have this iMac G4. How long I'll let it take up space in my life, we'll see. I'm an all emulator, all the time guy, mostly. So I could see me making that choice. But if you guys are saying, oh, I like the real, but I'll just use a modern monitor, modern mouse, like, why not just use an emulator, though? Why use a vintage computer at all if you're just going to attach a bunch of modern peripherals to it? Jack, answer me.
It's a good question.
Jack Hughes. Yeah.
I do.
Well, I think so. One thing for me, I do enjoy. One thing I can enjoy is like old keyboards. Mm-hmm. You know, like and that's not just like for like my computers. I love coming across a VT100 or something, and like the feel of that, like the look and the feel of the keyboards is nice. Like the Atari keyboards that I'm dealing with, they weren't really great keyboards back in the day, but it is still a distinct feel when you're using it that is very different from other keyboards that I have at my disposal today. Hmm. It's like I saw a thing, someone's working on a project of their own where they are building their own keyboard that fits into an Atari 8-bit computer that is just made with all modern microswitch, you know, modern keyboard stuff. And that's really cool, but at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, like at that level, you know, we've talked about it before, this, you know, the ship of Theseus thing of when you've replaced everything, what is left? And at that point, if everything you have is, okay, I have a brand new keyboard, a brand new joystick, a brand new screen, then all you're dealing with is what's on this circuit board.
Yeah.
And then that circuit board could just as well be, anything.
And if you've got like a FPGA replacement VIC chip or whatever, and...
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep. Curtis in the chat has experience with the Cocos and says, I preferred the deluxe joystick or the Wacos on the Coco. Mm. And I don't actually know. There is a company that makes joysticks and trackballs and things like that called Wico. I don't know.
Wico.
Is it so you pronounce it Wico? Like,
I always pronounced it Wico, but I don't know if that's correct.
I see.
It could be Wico. Could be Wico. Could be W-I-C-O. Yep. Maybe it's an acronym that you shouldn't pronounce. I don't
know.
It's
because Wico with a silent W. Who knows?
I like them.
Yeah, I have some Wico joysticks, and they're great.
Brandon in the chat, I liked his note that he likes to have the original part, but not necessarily use it every time. And that's probably a good compromise. Like, I will admit, and it's like, no one's going to see this thing, but when there's a long period of me not using this computer, I have unplugged the black ugly joystick and plugged back in the other one because it looks nicer. But that is such a poser thing to do, man, because I'm not using that mouse. It's like I pretend that it's there. It's like, oh, God, am I that shallow to myself? I'm the only one looking at it. It's just, oh, terrible, yeah. Terrible. I am not a man of many depths. It's just... So this iMac has brought some fresh shame realization on me of things I didn't know about myself. I don't know if this was a good purchase.
I think, yeah. So, I mean, like, as far as the stuff that I'm surrounded with at the moment, like, so much of this, so few of these things are like USB capable that I don't have many options, you know, except for really like period things, you know, like, so there are various Apple II joysticks you can get. And I think I have the CH1 plugged in right now to my 2C+, but I mean, like, you know, they're those are all the things that were available at the time, and you know, they're just as yellow and you know, non-ergonomic right. as they ever
well,
were.
Well, Charles Mangan makes a great adapter for the Apple II that lets you use USB things with it.
True, and I probably have that in a box somewhere.
Option 8, yeah.
I think I have a keyboard, like a keyboard shield, from him for plugging in a USB keyboard to like an Apple IIe or something. Cause I had this idea at one point that I was going to do this. This was for traveling with the Apple III. Like I wanted to adapt that to the Apple III so I could just bring the motherboard and not anything else, you know, so do exactly that we were just talking about, you know, like have a USB keyboard and have I guess it would be a USB keyboard and a, you know, solid state disk drive and you know, a little LCD monitor. just carry the big board. But
you mean literally just the board? I think if you got an airplane with a power supply and a board and keyboard hooked up to it, you are getting arrested, dude. It's like you with your electronics just working on stuff. Don't notice me. I'm just soldering in the back here. It's not going to end well for you, dude.
Yeah. Well, the Apple III motherboard is large, too. Mm. I mean, like it's bigger than even the Apple II, and that's pretty big. So... Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm you know, currently kind of setting things up here as well. And, you know, I do have a lot of little compact flash things and stuff dangling off things. But, there is a sense, I think you sort of nailed that like, you know, if I'm just doing what I could do on an emulator, then why, what am I doing? You know, like I may as well experience the annoyance of the disc swapping and joystick that flops over to a side or whatever.
But I did upgrade my iMac. I opened it up and I changed the hard drive to a solid state, maxed out the RAM, like did all the ooey-gooey stuff, changed the battery and stuff. And it made a massive difference. Like, oh my gosh, that thing just boots like nothing now.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I was thinking I would probably do that with, I do have some, you know, SCSI Desti adapters and things like that. And I think I might do that. I have a cube on my desk now and, I have this Color Classic that doesn't start. As soon as I deal with that, I am hoping that, I think that's one of the machines that can host a 2E card, and so I'm hoping I can stick a 2E card in that. And,
it can still host a 2E card too, I think, if you give it the 525 board upgrade. So you can upgrade. There's another board that fits inside there that you can still put the 2E card on, but have an even better computer.
Yeah, but at some point the CRT is going to fail. That's one sad thing, and it's kind of built
Jack
in.
Jack already told us he hates CRTs. That's right. Vintage computers in general is the takeaway I got.
That's right.
That's how it goes. Yep.
Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure exactly where I land on this. I mean, like, I do think kind of like to the extent that I use them, I would probably go for function, except that there's another part of me that's, you know, like the only reason I'm turning this thing on is because it's kind of, you know, there's kind of an interesting nostalgia or whatever. So
I honestly thought I would just want only the original stuff. The whole reason I got this was I love the aesthetic of it. I was very surprised that I was able to go, nope, I want to play this game and it's really frustrating. And I was quite surprised at my choice there.
What is the mouse that came with that machine? What is the?
Isn't it just a?
It's the white.
Is it the transparent lozenge?
The Pro Mouse.
Oh yeah.
It's the one that's white mouse with that like a tiny mouse encased in a larger amount of clear plastic, like something out of Jurassic Park. Like there was this ancient mouse and it got caught in amber and we released it. Like I don't know, it's ridiculous. And it looks like it has buttons on the side, but it doesn't. So those keep those grabby points.
I have the black version of the same mouse.
Oh, fancy man, fancy man with the, well, mine's Pro, but back before Apple cared about the color of Pro things. It's terrible. It's not the hand feel, although if you're a sweaty-palmed fellow, this is probably not a good choice. And it's not the lack of a right click or even the control click, it seems. That was messing me up. It's the fact that the lasers have come a long way in mice. Like, it's just this thing can barely track on my desk. It's terrible and super slow. And I was like, nope, I'm out.
But is it not the case that, you would just...
Is a mouse pad? I don't think
exactly.
So. Whatever. An AOL mouse pad or something?
Yeah.
Probably actually using a mouse pad.
I don't know where I put that, but somewhere I have this kind of nice mouse pad, which is basically just like a neutral face. It's just a circle that has the...
Nice. I mean, I guess I could look into a mouse pad because that would also be kind of a vintage thing.
Yes.
This is my mouse pad. I may have shown you this before. I'm very happy with my Atari 400 keyboard mouse pad.
I guess I could look into a mouse pad, which would be like but then it's another thing to have. Oh, the burdens on my life of things.
I think...
Don't make me own a mouse pad.
It is true that those inputs are... I mean, like, trying to use the mouse on the cube or whatever, it's not, you know, it's not super great.
I think somebody at Apple really wasn't sure the mouse would be necessary for this computer for some reason. The Mac, what do you need a mouse for?
The trackpad on like an iBook or a Duo, you know, that's also not as great as you remember.
Nope.
But anyway,
Brandon in the chat says I should have a stark white empty apartment with one glaring AOL mouse pad.
72 hours free or whatever it is.
Kind of sounds kind of fun to me.
And Curtis mentioned the 1985 Coco mouse. I think I have one of these, and it really, I think it's a joystick. It acts like a joystick, I think, right? Or you plug it into the joystick port. But yeah, they are pretty weird.
Like with a metal ball, he says. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time cleaning mouse balls, which is not a phrase young kids say nowadays.
That's right. That's right. I do remember. I remember that those rollers that would accumulate the little gray stuff.
Clean them off and clean off the little rollers in the inside that would just get gummed up. Did a lot of cleaning of those.
Yeah, it is true that to the extent that I start going back and using these things regularly, that same stuff is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But just it'll be modern dust getting in everything instead of vintage dust. Okay. Anyway, I don't think I have much more to add to that.
It's all good.
It was a good topic.
Yeah, good topic. And it's all downhill from here. So, another aspect of, as has been true in the last couple, I haven't really looked at the feedback. I think maybe we did talk about some of the feedback last time, though, now that I'm looking at this list of feedback that looks familiar enough that we probably already talked about it. So next time there will be feedback reviewed. So thanks everybody for
the
feedback that you've given us since January. And at some point we will come to it. So now I guess we can just turn to Carrington's topics.
I've got topics.
A couple of topics.
So this is from a while ago. I think I stumbled across this back in January, maybe. I haven't been on the show for a while. And if you guys haven't talked about it, it is a delight. So in 1982, a commercial, I think, was being filmed in a Sears department store. And for that, they shot a lot of B-roll. And that B-roll is gold. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And it's just like a whole bunch of just footage of a 1982 Sears department store, including electronic stuff. You can see like these the Telegames 4 Switch things, and just it's amazing. Like, it's just such a delight to go and looking at the hair and the clothing, like all the details. It's like somebody makes this as a movie. When I was watching it, I was like, boy, this is just so accurate. Like, the costumers are so rare. But of course, it's just footage. It's just footage from 1982. It's just how it really was. but you see the things that were on sale, and people wearing puffy stuff and giant hair, and it's the ties, the cash registers, like all these details are just so evocative. It's absolutely delightful. So if you haven't seen it in the few months since it's been floating around, you really, really, really should.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very good.
It's only 10
Did you guys
minutes,
watch it?
But,
yeah, I watched it a couple weeks ago after you posted. Oh, yeah, there's a little Vectrex going on in
there.
Yeah,
there's an Atari
playing a Vectrex video game. There's some like Atari display units.
Oh, I should bring the Vectrex.
Guy in a nice here. Brown leather coat buying some things.
Yeah, there's this one point where the guy's standing in the video game section, and behind is like a wall just full of Atari and Intellivision games. Like, and I want to go there so badly. I keep seeing things where I'm like, just if I could step into this video and just grab things and play with things, and just such a delight. But also the hair, the clothing, like the yeah. like all the other stuff. It's so 80s. You forget like so many details. There's so much taupe and brown, like so much taupe and brown in everything. Like, oh my goodness, my memory is the 80s are all neon pink. But no, it's a lot of taupes and browns and earth tones all over the place.
Yeah, very, very much earth tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the modern conception of the 80s is that, like all this like neon pastel, but. That was a part of it, but there was a lot of things that were not. It was still not that far from the 70s. You still had a lot of things that were just like brown and like weird orange and
yep.
dark green.
Mm-hmm. So it was great.
Very
I
cool.
just totally love it. I think I found it through Retroist or something like that, but it's just a completely delightful video.
Yeah, yep, it's very good. It's nicely feathered hair yeah. and
I found it. Yeah, I guess what's cool about it is for some reason it's like better than expected quality video. I mean, because it was from a
right.
ad shoot, right? You know, it's not like
it's got to be right off a master. Yeah, it looks amazing. It looks crazily high quality.
I think maybe this was from like a TV news segment, because at one point there's a guy who's like a reporter standing holding a microphone.
Yeah, I think
so
this
I think
was
this
supposed
was like,
to be B-roll for behind some sort of large TV yeah. news segment. So they just said get a bunch
right.
of footage. Somebody ran and got this,
right.
and it's pristine. Beautiful shot. So somebody who had a lot of shared interests with me went around and said, I'm going to film all the computer stuff and all the video game stuff and the electronics. And I'm like, yeah, that's the stuff I want to see. Awesome.
Yeah.
Way to go, video guy.
I wonder, yeah. I mean, so I wonder if there's got to be a lot of this kind of thing around, although maybe it's all been discarded by now. But so
I'm sure for many years, this seemed like completely useless footage. Like yeah. by 5 years later, everyone would be like, why would you even want to watch it? This is if they're not going
right.
to save Doctor Who episodes, why save this? But
right.
I'm so glad that because then 30 years later, it becomes gold again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Though I'm not sure that 30 years from now, people are going to look back at all the
30 years from now, people will watch this video, this yeah. particular video.
Yeah.
And they will also comment on my hair.
They'll watch the video of us watching this in the podcast.
And someone
Turtles all the way
react out. Video. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Let's see. How do I remove this? Yes. Okay. There we go. Excellent. And then as for the next topic that is in our show notes, anyone else want to contribute a topic, or should we just jump to Carrington's next topic?
Oh, I have more stuff to run. Oh,
just
I've got a neat thing.
Let's right
jump to mine. It's cool. It
okay.
is. So if you think the video was interesting to look at, what if it was something that instead was almost impossible to look at, but fascinating? So I present for you the Halt and Catch Fire syllabus. So this thing is wonky. The website is just all, it's just like somebody regurgitated. Yeah, try. You're going to, I see you trying to say, should I expand the menu? No, there is no way to make things line up at this website. It's just all over the place. But the idea here is a 15 class course that is supposed to run along with Halt and Catch Fire. So somebody's designed this thing to say, if you want to run a course, not really based on Halt and Catch Fire, but kind of inspired by Halt and Catch Fire. So you watch an episode of Halt and Catch Fire, and something in that episode will become the topic of the course. And so that's what you're going to discuss. So if I click on one at random, and so we look at class 5, it's the culture of hacking. And so every time on one of these, they will have these cones. So a cone is, it's come up before, it's like a story or dialogue, like a anecdote kind of thing to normally teach you about how you can't use logic. But in this case, it's just like neat thing. So kind of think about that. There's usually an aperitif like there is here. And these are all basically links to stuff on the internet that would form part of the syllabus. There's always a description, but it's not at the top. You think it would be. It's at the bottom. And questions that it calls prompts here. And so this is designed to be an entire course, 15 classes, based on Halt and Catch Fire. It is a really, really neat idea. And each class has a bunch of very interesting links that are all linked together thematically. It has some really interesting questions, you know, prompts and themes and to think about. There is PDFs you can download. And at the same time, it's a nightmare to look at. It's just all over the place. I'm like, how can this be a computer thing? It's just breaking everything to do with making a nice website design. Because it kind of looks like, was this left over from the 90s? No, this is a new thing. This is how it came out. So it's weird, but it's also an interesting sort of aesthetic. Kind of you can't look away from it. So I stumbled on this thing, and it's weird and lovely and cool and awful and just...
I'm looking at the page source. I think that's how it was written.
it's just a very bizarre thing. But I like this. Like, I love that somebody sat down and said, there should be a course, not like on. This isn't a course about Halt and Catch Fire. It's more that the topics that come up in that show, let's look at those from both a modern and a retro standpoint. And you would then teach a course using Halt and Catch Fire episodes as the inspiration for each class in your course. What a strange and delightful and wonderful thing for somebody to have put together. I completely love it. I can't look away. So it's great. So if you want to teach a course on this or something like it, then this could be a jumping off point or whatever. So it's cool. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
Yeah. And I think it'd be interesting to just kind of go through on your own. I mean, but I think it could be sort of an interesting thing to use as a, you know, as some kind of frame for introducing people to these concepts.
And on the site, there is a PDF you can download, which is the entirety of the syllabus, just in a PDF format. Basically just text, kind of easier to read through, but then you lose all the hyperlinks and stuff, I think. So,
yeah.
Although you could put those in PDFs. I just think they're not in this one. So. Anyway, it's cool. It's different. It's interesting. So it caught my eye. And thus I share with you.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well... We've now made it through the items of interest and news section. This is really getting to be, oh well, yes, can't wait till 233 is going to be great, guys. But anyway, now I guess it's already time for a word from our sponsor.
We challenged hotshot Garland Dwyer with the new Mattel Electronics baseball game.
You are off.
Inside, a tiny thinking computer plays like a team of pros. The computer fires a fastball. Now a curve. It's a triple. Garland's trying to stretch it home. New Pocket Baseball, one of 7 sports games from Mattel Electronics.
Hey, who's in there?
And we're back. So the host's retro computing gift idea. Once again, I don't know why Carrington's not host. Carrington has contributed all of these things. But at any rate,
host has to do more work.
I guess maybe that's it. But anyway, the host's retro computing gift idea this time is basically a site, what is it, throwboy.com shirts.
So Throwboy, we've talked about before. It's a company that had a bunch of pillows. And it kind of makes sense as Because throw pillow, throw boy, throw some boys, throw some pillows at boys. I don't know. So they've got these shirts. And I thought they were kind of cool because there's like a command and, you know, think different and all your basic Macintosh type shirts. But they had one that's just the time, 9:41. And that's an obscure sort of shirt, like just have a, it just says 9:41. So you'd have to be kind of an Apple fan to even think that this has anything to do with computers. So I suspect it's the kind of shirt that people would walk up to you, ooh, hold on, and ask you what it means, that you can make friends, and then you can show them your bag. Oh, that's right. Might actually have to get this shirt. So it's a cool thing. So Apple promo products usually have 9:41 on them. But originally, if you look at super old Apple promo products, they had 9:42. And the... I've heard the reason for this is it would be typically around 40 minutes into a keynote presentation that they would bring up the product shots to say, and this is the new iPad or iPhone or whatever. So it's 40 minutes in. They would practice. Everything was timed. And so they wanted the time on the promo photo, which was just a photo, to basically match the actual time that the audience was seeing on their watch. But they knew they probably wouldn't be able to hit bang on 9:40, so they started with 9:42 to give themselves that little buffer. And then as they'd rehearsed, they got better. No, we can do 9:41, and then became 9:41. So that's why Apple promo things are 9:41, because that's probably the – anyway, that's the thing. Steve Forstall, I think, was – whatever. Was it Steve Forstall? Anyway, Forstall, whatever Forstall's first name is, is the guy who I think told somebody, like at Engadget or something, that's actually why they do it.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Now, there's one product that doesn't do that. Do you guys know?
That doesn't.
If you see that one product that won't show that as its time.
I don't know.
It's the Apple Watch.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Any reason?
Which is 10.
Do they use some 10, different time or just random time?
No, different time. Like 10:09 or 10:10, because watches always have that as their little display, like a little happy checkbox thing. So clocks and watches, historically, if you look at a watch, like an analog watch in an ad, it'll say 10:09 or 10:10. And Apple does that for the Apple watches too, regardless of when they get displayed. But if it's an iPad or a computer or an iPhone or whatever, then they do the 9:41.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, you stole the thing I was going to say actually about the 10:08.
Whoops.
I had heard it as 10:08 actually. I think,
something like that. I was thinking of it as like a V.
Yeah. I think it's supposed to be that, you know, it makes clocks look happy, you know, like they sell more because it's kind of like a smiley face, right? Yeah, exactly.
Victory.
But it's also offset just a little bit. So clocks and largely analog clocks and, you know, watches and things will always be at 10:08. But the ridiculous thing is that became sort of like a marketing rule, as I understand it. And, you know, so this is what people did. But then, you know, like when you have a phone, a digital phone that has a readout on it that says, you know, 10:08, you've somehow, somebody has been following the rule without understanding the spirit of the rule.
Now, it also could be that the 9:41 thing is for a completely different reason. Like, who knows? I just had heard that that's why they do it. So somebody might read and say, no, that's not it. So I don't know. But the story I've heard is basically 40 minutes into a keynote is when they would unveil things.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
It's a cool idea, even if it isn't actually true.
Mm.
There are actually other sort of like, it does seem to be pretty Mac themed, but there are or Apple themed at least. But there's a lot of other shirts as well that you can get at this place. But cool. Okay, so our recommendation is the 9:41 shirt for
sure.
The reason that it will make you friends.
Make you friends with your bag.
That's right.
You'll have your
Beagle Brother bag.
Your Beagle Brother bag. Your 9:41 T-shirt. I'm going to have friends, you guys. You just wait and see.
Any day now.
Any day now. Scott Forstall. Thank you, Curtis. Scott.
Yes. Right. Yes. Is that what we... I've lost track even of what you said before.
I think I was calling Steve Forstall. Everybody at Apple has to be called Steve.
That's right.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a Monty Python sketch that was something sort of like that. And when you go back and listen to it, it turns out that's not... That didn't really, you know, pass the test of time. Don't listen to that.
Oh no.
I forgot. What is it? Bruce. Bruce is the name. But
Bruce. G'day, Bruce.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm remembering parts of that now. Yeah, that wouldn't age well.
At any rate. Okay. now, once you're done buying your shirt, your Time shirt, we can move on to spending your money on eBay. And Carrington, after having the news and the topic and the gift idea, you get to go first.
Yes. I am V. I'm a clock. First, I should say Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy. And Jeremy Rand is in the chat. He said he's my friend from Canada, so you wouldn't know him. Well played, Jeremy. Okay, I have a very cool choice. We talked a few episodes ago about the BBC and various services that would broadcast code over the air, like over television. You could record it. Remember all those little beats? So this is something related to one of those. So Basic Ode, or however you pronounced, was pitched as like an Esperanto for computers. Now, one might argue, wasn't Basic itself supposed to be that? But no, this is going to be a common Basic language that could be used by many different computers. And so the idea here was that, like, this one in particular says it's for the Apple II and IIe, the BBC models A and B, Commodore 64, PET 34, 8000, the VIC-20, the Dragon 32 and 64, like a whole bunch of stuff. Some I've even heard of before. What the heck is the Sharp MZ80A? I can imagine what chip it takes. And the K? So the video G? Like, just, so this is neat. And so the BBC had a radio broadcast called, and it's a great name, The Chip Shop. And so The Chip Shop would talk about computers in general. And then they had their takeaway service, which they would broadcast late at night. So on the, when the long wave had the shipping forecast over VHF, they would broadcast an audio program that first had the chip shop proprietor talking about basic code and what you could do with it. And then they would just broadcast essentially just like you'd hear modem sounds, like just here's it is. And so they would tell you in front, okay, get your tape recording, and then you'll be able to download this, and it'll be basic code that if you run the basic code kit available for all these computers, you'll then be able to run the program they talk about in the show. Absolutely love it. So after us talking about that kind of thing, I was just totally chuffed to stumble across this. So this is the Chip Shop Basic Code 2 Plus, which presumably was the second version of this. I don't know. Comes on cassette for all those various computers. So it's the cassette plus the little manual. And so you would run this cassette to load your basic code interpreter, and then you could type in or download or load from saved cassette, I guess, the audio program that the chip shop broadcasts for their takeaway service. Completely delights me. In addition to that, though, went online and I found an example broadcast of the chip shop's takeaway service.
Okay, yeah, I was been put on YouTube. Yeah.
Right. So you can actually listen to the show. He talks at the beginning. It's really neat. So if you get this thing, you can download it. You could then copy the audio from this takeaway service, presumably to an audio cassette, and then load it into your computer and see. And it was a game that night. So you can see what game they were broadcasting at super late in the morning on some Sunday. I'm enamored by this entire thing. Completely love it.
That is really cool.
Yep.
Cool.
And it's cheap. It's less than $20. It's £13. No idea if it's a good price. It just, these things were on my mind because we had talked about broadcasting stuff. And I think this is just an adorable. And I love that it's called The Chip Shop. Yeah. The guy who presents is terrific. He says they picked him because he just sounds like a good bloke who would like to know more about computers. And that's exactly what he does sound like. So he's just it's a terrific thing. And it's amazing how much the BBC did in the late 70s and into the 80s to normalize and promote computer usage among the general population.
Yeah.
That's my way of saying up with socialism. But, you know, I just said it nicely.
Cool.
Love it.
That's pretty neat.
So that's my choice.
All right. I have a couple of things. The first is that so this came to view. So this is the Mattel electronics.
Baseball. I totally had this.
It was stuck in the vintage computing section, you know, so it came to my attention. You know, this is the kind of thing that people who just look at retro games and things, you know, it's not a vintage computing thing exactly, although there's some kind of computer in there, I guess.
Right.
This particular one doesn't work, but it comes with the box. And, you know, I almost think that's as good because it's really it's a pretty cool box, actually. nice green thing. This, it's the same kind of deal that, you know, there was the football and football two and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure I don't think I had this, but I, you know, friends of mine did, and we played this.
Yeah, I remember seeing this in school. Yeah. Kids had this in school.
Oh, now that you say that, maybe I didn't have, maybe I just played this. I had the football one. Maybe I didn't actually own the baseball one and just played it. Like, kids would pass these around in school. So, yes. Okay. I think that I'm in the same boat as you. I didn't have this, but I played it at school.
I'm pretty sure that in my office I have football too. You know, I reacquired in the modern era. But anyway, so this one doesn't work. It doesn't work because there's something stuck on the battery, says the seller. And what is stuck on the battery is an old battery that was once plugged in. So this is presumably quite easily repairable, even if you just have to replace the little 9-volt connector. So if that's, I mean, if that's the only problem, it does look like it was fused there. Like there's some sort of battery problem.
But the 9-volt connector, you could replace that thing. That's a 5-cent part. Like, that's nothing. You can replace that so easily.
Yeah.
And looking at it, there doesn't seem to be any, like, acid damage.
Yeah.
Like, on the connector, sure. But in the actual bay, like, the foam is still there.
Yeah.
I bet you it's just pop on a new 9-volt connector and you're good. Not that these games are great, but.
Yeah. So, and given that it comes with a box, it's pretty nice. Yep. I mean, it's starts at $20 bid, has a week to go, but. So, and since, you know, this is not going to hit the feed at any time, that's going to threaten anyone's ability to bid on this.
This was just for the YouTube people.
That's right. It's pretty cool, pretty cheap. Particularly if it doesn't go any higher. So I thought that was kind of neat. Next thing is Mac security brackets. I
had these. I remember these.
I have no experience with these.
Oh, no, I totally had this. There's a security, it would say security, it's like a security slot in old Macs, and this basically is like a little T thing that would go in, and you could feed a lock through it, and then that would stop you from being able to take the computer, like you chain it to your desk.
Yes, I was kind of wondering about, like, how effective are these things? I mean, like, you know.
Not that effective.
Are they, I don't quite understand exactly how they work, but, you know, if you can put them on, can't you take them off?
Well, no, because you'd put a padlock through it. Like, the whole point is it goes on there, and then you use the little chain, and you chain it through, and you put a lock on it. So, now, it's a thin, thin little braided cord. So, very easy bolt cutter. We'll just snip this. But the idea is you would stop just a casual person from walking by and just, like, picking up your computer walking, especially if it's a laptop.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, the laptops had this connector.
There was a long period of time where Macs had these, there'd be a security slot, and that's what it was for. It would just let it slide in, and then it's like a reinforced part of the case. So if you try to pull, you'd really have to bust it out to break it out of the computer.
Okay. Yeah, I've definitely seen it on the back of the classic Macs, but I didn't realize it was a laptop. Makes a lot more sense. I should look at my iBook and see if it would, you know, still had that. But anyway, if you want an original Apple part, they cut away all the identifying information and just left the shrink wrapped thing. So, but it does say Apple on it, and it has a Torx screwdriver, an official Torx screwdriver. I don't know if the screwdriver says Apple. I don't think
it
does.
What are the screws for? I don't understand.
I don't know. Good question. But they're Torx screws.
I don't remember having to open up the case to put those in. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah.
I don't remember doing that.
How else would you put it in and have it stay and not just slide back out?
So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe I'm misremembering this. But I 100% I remember those. We had them at work. We had a whole bunch of computers that used these.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear they just went in and turned or whatever. Maybe I'm I don't know. I'm old.
I feel like I know that I've seen these, but I've never installed any myself and never really given much thought.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the boat I'm in as well. Like I probably even have some of these around, you know, but anyway, I was realizing that I didn't quite know how they worked. And now I,
Herb in the chat says, you remove the thumb screws that are on there and replace them with the Torx screws. So actually you're removing a thing and putting this in. Okay. Hi Herb.
Oh, to make it harder for people to just unscrew it with their fingers. Like it makes it so that, yeah, it's harder to open up the case to remove the thing also.
That's cool. I wonder if this, you know, I wonder if the screwdriver by itself actually is a useful thing to have, because I always hear people talking about, you know, like you need this Torx screwdriver to open up the case or whatever. Maybe this
old
is
Max
a
used
way
a lot
to get
of
it.
Like yeah T whatever T8s or something. It's better to have a long one, like in the handle of the classic computers, like the SE and stuff. It's down deep in that handle, so you want a really long Torx 8 or 5 or 2 or 15 or whatever the heck number it is.
Yeah, though I have one of those little kits, you know, kits of many little bits, or screwdriver heads or whatever. I had no problem with that, like reaching in to that recessed screw.
Some of us
like
had difficulty, and our joysticks flop over, Paul.
I guess that's true.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Everyone is different. Okay.
That's right. Happens to everybody at some point.
When you have a cocoa.
Okay, the next one I have is, I had written this in the show notes, in our internal show notes, as an obsolescence bonanza. So,
alternative name for our podcast.
Yeah. But this is a 6 VHS set to train you on how to use WordPerfect 5.1. It comes with VHS cassettes and also floppy disks.
Also shrink-wrapped.
And, yeah, right. So somebody never did learn how to use WordPerfect 5.1. but it's pretty cool. So yeah, it's got, I mean, it is actually a set. They're not 6 identical things. They're, you know, like one is learning, one is for the office, one is, I can't quite read it, but you know, anyway, there's
secrets and time savers.
Yes, right. I see. Yes. There's a reflection on the thing, but I can kind of see the time savers part.
So presumably this was for, Windows or DOS or something.
Yeah, I assume so. I think of WordPerfect 5.1 as being a PC thing.
Because it comes with floppies, so it's not just like this is a video cassette, you can do it for anything.
Yeah.
So presumably it's a PC thing.
Yeah, it's quite possible that this is unpreserved. because it's also quite possible that no one cares.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing that you could get and dump on YouTube, and someday somebody wants this. We were all enamored by that Sears store walkthrough.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not going for much, and I wouldn't expect that it would go for much. But yeah, starting bid 15, or you can make an offer.
It's $15, Paul. Do it. Do it. Pull the trigger. Do it. You have a whole new house now to fill up with stuff. $15 seems a very reasonable thing for 6 shrink wrap things with discs and tapes.
Right.
Give the person their $15. Come on.
That's right. They were nice enough to keep it alive for this long.
This is perfect for the WordPerfect enthusiast in your life. The perfect right, gift.
Exactly. That's right. Okay, what is the next one? Oh, yeah, this one. Actually, Ian sent this to me. This is, and I didn't actually look at it carefully enough, but it is a new game for the TRS-80.
Hooray.
More games from Dreamland Software. So there's a little description down here. All new from Dreamland Software for 2021. New 2-disc package comprises what is in effect the full Dreamland Software collection.
Bunch of games here.
Yeah, I mean, so it's new, you know, newly made. So if you want to support that kind of an effort, this is how you do it.
Cool. That is fantastic. Hooray for new games.
There are 6 available, 8 sold. It's £29 British pounds. It looks nice too, a little shrink wrapped, a little, you know, thing in a baggie on a floppy with printed instructions. Very TRS-80 graphics. So
nice. Super, super, super cool. Yeah. Curtis in the chat says there's a couple new games, and there's also a clone of the Atari 2600 Activision game Stampede. I loved Stampede. I was listening to an Activision podcast once where they were talking about how awful Stampede is, and they were wrong. Those Activision people, like, come on, man, Stampede was super fun. That's my memory of it anyway.
I'm not even sure if I know which game that was. Oh, right, that.
Yeah, that's when you have to lasso.
Yeah.
But I like horse racing as well for Intellivision. Like, I like some strange games.
Yeah. Anyway, but I think that's cool. You know, we've talked a little bit about the, you know, some new games that were written on other platforms, but at least the TRS-80 has not gotten a lot of discussion on
that. Because I had a Model 1, I have such a soft spot for TRS-80 stuff. Like, just lovely, lovely, blocky terrible graphics. I just so yeah. slow, so beautiful. I love it. I just love the aesthetic.
And this game seems to be just character graphics. So,
mm-hmm.
welcome to TRC.
Look at that. There's a picture of Spock.
It is really pretty great, actually, yep. what they did with that. I had a friend who had a, I think it was a, I don't know, what Model 3 or something. And there was some sort of a animation type program. You could make sort of frames of an animation and then, you know, play it as a movie. And then you know, you'd turn off the thing and it would be gone. You know, so we would spend a couple hours making a little animation that didn't last beyond those couple of hours. Because, you know, I don't think, there's like, I don't know, either we didn't have a disc or, you know, we didn't know how to save it. I don't know. But at any rate, but it was pretty fun.
Like
actually.
Tears in Rain.
That's right. Exactly. What else? Let's see. Oh, yeah. So, and this is actually something that Blake of our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody should talk about this. This is a Raspberry Pi case in the shape of an eMate. So an eMate 300.
Like kind of, not quite eMate, but very eMate inspired, I think.
Yeah, inspired, yeah.
It's pretty close. for comparison, this is an actual eMate. an actual eMate 300 auction I'm showing on the screen.
You see how the eMate cover is kind of rounded on the edges, whereas this new one is like got pointy bat ears.
That's right, yeah.
Or cat ears, I guess.
But anyway, so this is it's basically a Raspberry Pi enclosure. It has a
functional keyboard. And I think it's fully 3D printed, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody just 3D printed.
That's correct, yeah. What's kind of funny about this is that it's basically someone putting their class projects on eBay. So
cool.
I designed and built it as a final project for industrial design at my college. Says the seller. There is exactly
this person
one of
becomes
these.
Like a super famous industrial designer, then having an early class project could be a big deal.
Mm.
It's That's like an investment. Cool. Who knows? The
so
keyboard
the case
designed, looks
yeah.
cool, but the space bar looks teeny. That's the space bar I would miss a lot.
There are a lot of weird keys on there. There's a sleep key that's or something. It has a bunch of Z's on it. It's like Z's going up into the diagonal corner. I wonder what that. Maybe it really is a like put this to sleep key. But yeah, and I mean this is actually it's very small, so it'd probably be pretty hard to type on it. But still, it's kind of neat. It's I mean it looks nice. It's an interesting thing to do, I suppose, is to make this to make this available. This seller actually has another class project as well. If you want to, sort of help fund the person's education, Android tablet turned into a laptop factor, one of a kind, I guess, super rare.
that's about as rare as it comes.
Yep. But anyway, it's kind of neat. And just for comparison, I think the actual eMate auction, this is a pretty nice eMate. It's seems kind of expensive to me. It's a 215 starting bid, but it does, you know, it's shown to function. The screen has pretty good contrast.
Did either of you guys ever have an eMate?
I've never even seen one in person. I always thought they looked really intriguing. Paul's but reaching I've, only just, down. I've only ever seen pictures. Yeah. How many do you have, Paul?
Paul's got one at hand.
Here's my eMate. Yeah.
Okay. Very nice.
So I guess it does have the curvy top and not the the bat top.
I've used an eMate, but I never owned one.
It's in my little pile of Newton stuff.
Pile of Newtons.
Because it is it's the most powerful of the Newtons, basically.
Right. It's the super Newton.
Yeah.
What year did that come out?
You could just look up when various Batman movies were released.
Yeah.
Because it's so inspired. So it must have been like if there was a Batman movie in 96, this came out in 97. It's that kind of thing. Like it's clearly Batman's going to be big.
I mean, these things were made, I think they're supposed to be basically for students.
Oh, yeah, 97.
Mm-hmm. What year did we decide it was?
97.
Okay.
You know, for kids.
Yeah. But, yeah, so it's, I think it's supposed to be sort of like resilient for schools, you know. So there's various things that are kind of like school related. And, in fact, actually, I think the one I have right here is has some stuff installed on it from from whoever the school person was that had it before me, but Anyway, yeah, they're kind of neat. And they're modern enough that you can put like a Wi-Fi card into them and connect to, you know, old style Wi-Fi and things like that. So
cool. It's neat to see how the design choices made for it to make it rugged, like all the extra bits around the outside, carried through into the iBook G3, which wouldn't have come out till a couple years later. Like that would be like 98, 99, something like that. So this predates all those Bondi blue, big, lovely, awful keyboarded iBook G3s. So it's kind of neat to see this as a precursor of those.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I mean, they definitely look like the beginning of that idea. Mm-hmm. The keyboards actually are really nice on these, I have to say. I like the typing on this much better than what came after. Mm-hmm. So those are my auctions. Not very many.
Well, by your standards.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I mean, I guess this has been... like the people who have been following along on YouTube probably know this, but I just moved. And so like everything is all in disarray, although I do have various things that are at hand. Now I can pull up the E-Maid and show you and all that. But I can hit the button on my cube and have it go bung.
Brandon in the chat is guessing that this whole time your podcasting chair is just a stack of E-Maids.
Exactly.
Yes. Hilarious.
Anyway. Yes. I think I was just basically saying, any minute now, things will be back to normal and I will be more prepared, but it's okay to have a couple short episodes here and there.
Yep. That's fine.
So what that means is that we are already at the closing discussions. It seems like the time has just whizzed by, but, Carrington once again is first in the alphabetical list of people. And so, you have a closing discussion link.
Do I should look at the show notes. Oh, yes. That thing. Yes. So TRS 8-bit. I vaguely think maybe we talked about this before, but sometimes like I'll discover a thing that I love and then it just flies away from my brain and then I'll rediscover it. And I get to relove it all over again. So TRS 8-bit is like a magazine in PDF form. That's been coming out for years. Like it's in year 14 or something like that. Latest edition is March 2021. And it's just an absolute delight. So if you like TRS-80 stuff, you already know about this, no doubt. And I'm just like the new guy to the block. And I bet if we look through many years of doing this podcast, I probably discovered it before, maybe more than once, and have fallen in love with it every time. Who knows? It seems like the kind of thing I would do. But it's great. So I stumbled on it. And I'm hooked on this thing. I am so hooked on this. I don't have any TRS-80 stuff. I have but it's lovely. It's just a great vintage style magazine / newsletter kind of thing. It's PDF available for free. And it's just got like articles and like all the stuff you would expect. And so it's like how to program certain things or like game reviews. And it's just like a whole bunch of stuff. Clearly created using kind of some vintage techniques of printing out old things and cut and paste, and which just adds to my joy of the aesthetic. It's great. So it's a total mishmash and it's fitting for what it is. So if for some reason you're into TRS-80 stuff but don't know about this thing, run, don't walk, because it's great. It's absolutely, you got 14 years of these things to catch up on, and I just absolutely love it. And they're huge. Like the latest one is like a couple of hundred pages or something. It's like, what is it? Almost 300 pages? It's enormous. 300 and, I don't know, it's still scrolling. I'm at 364. 364 pages. Like that's crazy. So...
Wait, and how often does this come out? Is it monthly?
Daily. No, I'm kidding. I think it's quarterly or something. Okay. But like, that's insane. 364 pages. So just enormous. It has ads. It has articles. It has little comics. It's got everything. I'm completely in love with it. So I'm not 100% sure who creates it, but it's obviously an act of love, and it's delightful. Everything about it is delightful.
I there's something that I really like a lot about the like, you know, typewriter font on a like YouTube shortened link.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like,
so you just download them as a PDF, and they're great. I completely love it. I think the really big ones,
very nice. Yeah.
It could be that that really big one is actually like the annual collective, like that is year 14 put together or something. I'm kind of vague on how these get published because I was just diving in and out all over them. But they're downloadable as a PDF and they're just delightful.
Yeah, it does actually kind of look like the year 14 is still loading.
Yeah, it just goes and goes and goes, right?
Yeah, 364. Yeah, I see. Yeah, so I think this is probably just all of them put together, but it really is nice.
Yep. Just an absolute joy. So I've linked that in the show notes. Everybody, whether you use TRS-80 stuff or not, it's really enjoyable to look through it.
I've been meaning to, you know, attempt to get into that a little bit. You know, I have a Model 4P because my idea was basically I didn't want to commit the desk space it would require to have like a regular full size one. But the 4P is the portable so I have something that I can run these TRS-80 things.
It's portable, but it's not like tiny.
No, right. It's like sewing machine portable.
Right. It's luggable.
Yes, right. Huggable.
Lovable.
Yes.
The luggable, lovable 4P.
The model 2 and 4, whatever, always to me just look like what airline check-in counters should use. It's 100% an airline check-in counter form factor.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever I've sat in front of one, I feel like I should be asking somebody where their flight is to. Boarding pass, please.
Mm-hmm. Or changing your, you know, high school grades or whatever.
Yeah, of course. Also useful for that.
All right, Jack, any closing notes or thoughts?
Not really. I have like some projects that are in the pipeline that I have not yet done, so I have nothing to report. Okay. I hope to say, oh, I've done this cool thing, but I haven't done it yet. Yeah. So
I've thought about doing a cool thing. At some point, I will do a cool thing.
Had ideas.
Yeah, I've been, you know, so I guess as I was saying before, I just moved and I've been trying to like lay out things around my desk and figure out like how to make it look not insane and, you know, have things be functional and stuff like that. It's pretty fun. Yeah, most of the things work. I've gotten the 2C Plus here. And the 3 plus and the cube all started, and my Color Classic just goes bung and doesn't do anything. So I have to get that fixed. I have a Provitz here, but I don't know if that has never actually quite worked. But pretty soon I hope I will get it to work. I think it's the power supply that doesn't work, and I just have yet to deal with it. But the Provitz is a Bulgarian Apple II clone. So
cool.
Yeah, I saw one of those at Cannes Fest. In fact, I think a couple years at Cannes Fest.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I'm not sure if this is the same model as the one that was there at Cannes Fest, but I think it's a 2 plus clone rather than a 2E clone. But anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to, like, you know, making it display Cyrillic and that kind of thing.
Cool.
Otherwise, I think, you know, it's basically, although they assert, I think the Provitz company or whatever, you know, asserts that it is not a clone. There's no way that it is not a clone.
Right. Sure, it looks like a clone.
That's right. But anyway, okay. So hopefully in the near future, people who are waiting on the podcast feed will get something like, you know, 9 hours of podcasts to listen to all at once. But
perfect.
And for those on YouTube, we will be back in just a couple weeks. That's it for the show. You can find the show notes for this and all the RCR shows at rcrpodcast.com. You can discuss the show in the forums at vcfed.org/forum/forum.php. You can follow RCR on Twitter at rcrpodcast. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/rcrpodcast. You can send feedback to feedback@rcrpodcast.com, and perhaps we will at some point read it and talk about it. We are a member of the Throwback Network at throwbackreviews.net. And please write a review on iTunes if you want or not. And until next time,
Retro-commute! Even on camera, we can't light it up.
No, well.
What pulse for? Fix it in post. It's a place.